Good evening, everyone. My name is Gilles, and I am an alcoholic. And thank you so much, Steven, for inviting me tonight and for giving me the opportunity to be of service. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is Sunday, March 13, 1982. I have a service position. And I have a home group, and I have a sponsor, and I am sober tonight by the grace of God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you a little bit about myself. The name and the accent, for those that are familiar with it, I was born in France. I used to say that I grew up in France, but I actually didn't quite grow up in France. I just grew larger. And my growing up, my real growing up started when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, this particular case, one room of Alcoholics Anonymous, a little bit over 40 years ago. My parents met in medical school in Paris and separated very shortly after my birth. So I have actually no recollection whatsoever of my parents ever being together as a couple. My mother was working in Paris, and there was a problem with raising me at the time. My grandmother, actually had the responsibility at the time of my care. My grandmother was, a very lonely, very sad, very depressed, woman. She was a World War I widow. My grandfather, my father's mother, died when fairly young as a result of World War I wounds sustained during the war. And then my mother lost her father when she was 4 years old. The two families, my mother's family and my father's family, could not have been any more different than they were. My mother's family was an old French family, Catholic, stern, humorless, and hardworking, honest, all of that. My father's family were Jewish, had migrated from Eastern Europe westward to escape persecutions, and my grandfather ended up in France before World War I. And went back to Romania, where he was from, to get his wife, and then moved permanently to France. The thing that they essentially had in common was their concept of God. My mother's family, old world Catholics, believed that the more one suffered down on this side of the world, the better a chance one had to sit closer to the Father in the next life. And my father's family were Holocaust survivors. They had to flee France and escape to save their lives. The cloud of the Holocaust was still there whenever I had contacts with them when I was little, which was not very often. And they were also culturally very different. They spoke different languages. My father's family spoke Jewish and Yiddish and Romanian, and so the contrast could not have been certainly for me. Could not have been more more clear. My father was an extremely arrogant man. He had divided the world into two categories, two distinct categories, the assholes and himself. Also, Later on, when I was much much older, I asked him why he had gone into medicine, because, well, he didn't do very much with that profession. And he told me that he went into medicine so he wouldn't be a piece of shit, and that's an exact translation from the French. So that kind of, you know, puts the character where he belongs. I was an extremely solitary child, and very, very afraid. The stories that I heard when I was growing up were stories of war and death. Both families were matriarchal, with very strong women, at the helm, so to speak. And, the only role model, the only male model that I had when I was growing up was my great uncle, who was just absolutely a wonderful man. And they had no children, so I was like their grandchild. And he was a World War I hero. One of the things he did, however, was to talk about the World War I all the time. And I remember at family get together or dinners, he would tell the same stories, and all of my great aunts and grandmother, etc., would roll their eyes and say, you know, here it goes again. And the stories had to do with the nature of World War I. And he would tell about the life in the trenches, how they would walk on the cadavers of their French friends, how people were getting butchered all over the place. And as a little child, I was really terrified, and I saw the world, as I've said, as an extremely dangerous place, which started the very great fears that I had. I was extremely shy, and from very, very early on, I had the feeling that I really didn't quite belong anywhere. I was a very good student. I was bright, and did very well in school. And I prefer the company of books to that of people or my family. And I really wasn't exposed to other children. As I said, fear was one of the main traits that I had, and also this sense that really there was no place for me, that I was just not good enough. I just wasn't enough. I started, drinking when I was 10 years old. My mother had moved to Normandy at the time to get away from my father. They were still, they were divorced at the time, finally. And, she was working all the time. She's an obstetrician. So she was, delivering babies at night and then seeing patients, etc. And she was at the time also in charge of the maternity ward of a brand new hospital, which was an enormous responsibility for a young physician. So I was left by myself most of the time, and I discovered then the miraculous effects of alcohol that I could drink. Some of the stuff that she had in the bar or from a bottle of wine that was left after a dinner, this type of thing, and it would change the way I felt about myself. Even at 10 years old, it was starting to be a revelation. And then, for the subsequent years, I tried to drink as much as I could, as often as I could. By the age of 14, 15, I was stealing money from my mother to go to cafes in France. And the French laws as far as serving teenagers or even children were very lax at the time, which enabled me to drink. And by the age of 15, I was already a blackout drinker. I drank for effect. And all the things that had been important in my life until then, such as being a good student, being a good son to the best of my ability, to my mother, a good grandson, etc., went by the wayside, and the the thing that became more and more important was drinking, because of the effect of alcohol and its power. I mean, we're all alcoholics here, and we've all experienced the power of alcohol, and we're the lucky ones that have survived to talk about it, at least until today. And the power of alcohol over me was enormous. It was just absolutely amazing. By the age of 18, I had gotten into quite a bit of trouble. I was expelled from the French school system. And my mother thought about the only thing that she thought about what to do with me was to send me to the United States, where my father sought refuge. And I'll go back a little bit. A number of years before that, when I was about 10 or 11 years old, the laws in France as far as delinquent fathers were concerned had changed. My father had not paid alimony or child support. And my mother had contacted her lawyer, and he was facing a very serious fine and arrears, and a possible time in jail even. And so he contacted his sister, who had moved to the United States, and fled there. And we found out through my grandparents, when I was having surgery at the time, and my mother wanted to contact him, that he had fled. He was no longer there. So this was another abandonment for me. And I do have a serious problem with, or had a serious problem with that. So at the age of 18, to go back to that, my mother thought that the solution for me was to move to the United States. She contacted my grandparents. My father lived with his parents for most of his life, and they were the ones who were pulling the strings. And she sent me over to the United States, which was something that really made me extremely, extremely angry at the time. And I spoke very little English. The culture was very different from the culture I had known in France. I was uprooted. I was living with people I hardly knew, my grandparents. I realized very quickly that my father, as always, was far more interested in his girlfriends than he was interested in, doing anything for me. And at the time, I started really to drink. For oblivion, and I got together. I went to a very, very good high school here in Bethesda, Maryland, and which was actually a pharmacy. This was in the late 60s, early 70s, and one could find any drug whatsoever that one wanted there. But really, alcohol was my drug of choice. And I was with a group of foreign students, and every weekend or more often than that, we would get completely oblivious, and I would drunk pass out and be in blackouts just about every other weekend. Also, I found a way to go to Washington D.C. with my French passport to be able to procure liquor, scotch or whatever I could afford at the time, and crawl back in upstairs at my grandparents' house and drink by myself for escape. I was extremely angry, and also at the age of 18, another thing that was to have a major impact on my life for the next 20 years happened. I developed an extremely rare neurological condition called cluster headaches. Cluster headaches, as the name implies, come as a cluster. They're horribly painful headaches. They come in cycles, usually at the turn of the season. And they last usually, the cycle usually lasts for 2 to 3 months. And I could have anywhere between 4 to sometime 8 of those headaches for 24 hours, which meant that my life had stopped. I was very heavily medicated for that, particularly with barbiturates, to try to knock me out at night because I couldn't sleep. The headaches would wake me up. And so, again, with fear, I started, over the subsequent years to live in fear of when, the next cycle of cluster headaches would come and strike. I discovered also that, by mixing barbiturates and alcohol, I could get out of it as very quickly, and also I would be able with the barbiturates to mitigate some of the withdrawals from drinking that I was starting to experience at the time. Moved on to college, and there was nothing particularly remarkable there, except that the progression of my illness. To give you an idea, my nickname, my freshman year, was the crazy Frenchman. My nickname, my senior year, was the frog who couldn't leap. So that is really a sign that I was progressing in the right direction. Because of the cluster headaches, it took me 7 years to finish college. I had to take sabbaticals and so forth, and also at the time started to discover that benzodiazepines as well that I could mix with alcohol, and even people that I was fully an alcoholic, a full blown alcoholic by then with the withdrawals from alcoholism, you know, waking up in the middle of the night sweating and shaking, and this feeling that my heart was going to explode, and that, you know, this feeling of impending doom that so many of us knew. And I knew that I was an alcoholic, and that terrified me. But that was not enough for me to quit drinking. I just could not, could not stop. I went to my first AA meeting in 1977. I had not fully understood the banking system in the United States, and I had written a lot of bad checks over the in various stores in the town where I was going to school in Virginia, and I was facing having to go to court and things like that, and It was strongly suggested that I go to AA, and I don't even remember going to my first meeting. I was just so out of it, and subsequent two or three other meetings that I went to, and I remember I was really really quite irritated that you know, people were calling me up and wanted to drag me to a meeting. You know, I had better things to do, and I just could not. I was just too scared, and I couldn't. As I said, I couldn't see life without alcohol. Having alcohol was the only thing that I thought would kill the pain and allow me to continue. And this went on. This went on for. Another 5 years. I went back to France and I was a blackout. I was living with my mother. I was stealing medication from the hospital where she worked. I was driving in blackouts, and why I was never caught or arrested is just a miracle. Why I never got into any serious accident or injure other people or myself is also a grace, and I believe today that someone was looking out for me even then, because I certainly was completely irresponsible and a danger to myself and others. During that time also, I suffered from extremely severe depressions, which, and I continued to suffer from cluster headaches, was in detox twice for alcoholism, and also in a mental institution for 3 months for extremely severe depression and suicidal tendencies, all of that. And yet, I still couldn't see that that alcohol was really the main cause of my problems, and my inability to live life on life's term, and so forth and so on. I tried to stay stay dry for various periods of time on fear alone. And also I tried, my mother put me on interviews for a while, and then I realized that in France the interviews pill looked absolutely exactly like a very very common brand of aspirin that every household had, etc. So when my mother was on call at the hospital, I would switch the interviews for the aspirin, and before going to the hospital on call, my mother would make sure that I would take the interviews, which the pill which she believed was interviews, and which actually turned out to be aspirin, and then she was absolutely just, you know, just flabbergasted when she would get home and I'd be drunk. It's something that I told her later on that after I got sober what the deal was with that. But that's the extent to which I would go to continue to drink. And one of the things that I thought also at the time, during the various periods of time during which I was dry, was that the fact that I'd never really been accepted in my family was the fact that I was not a member of the medical profession as they were. And I decided to apply to school in England, where to study osteopathic medicine. Managed to manipulate my father into paying for that, and decided to go to England. Not so much with the intention of studying, really, but the intention of going away and you know, trying to do something different to get away from them. The obsession to drink was there all the time, whether I was drinking or not. And as soon as I got to England, I started drinking again, starting having cluster headaches again, and of course started to get medication for the cluster headaches, etc., etc. I went to AA meetings in England, I would lie about the length of sobriety that I had, and I really wasn't fooling anyone but myself. I would disappear for a while. I would come back after I was feeling particularly ill. I managed to stay dry for a period of 6 months and did fairly well in school. I did study. And I remember for my birthday, it was my 30th birthday. We went to a party in London with friends, and I got drunk again. And this was the last binge. It lasted until from December the 3rd until March 13th. And at the end of my drinking, I was sharing a house with two other students, and at the end of my drinking, I had become completely nocturnal. I would not show my face during the day, or could not show my face during the day, because I was too ashamed and too sick. I was, I don't know, about 25, 30 pounds on the weight. I was covered with bruises. I was falling. We had a very steep staircase. I was falling down all the time. And my main activity consisted of going to the local country store. We lived in a small village with an empty suitcase, and I would buy with my father's money whatever booze I could afford. Crawl back to my room when my roommates were at school, and drink. Take Valium and other meds and pass out. And my two roommates were saying, well, let the son of a bitch die upstairs in his room. And that's what I was doing. I was in and out of blackouts all the time. I didn't know when day was day, when night was night. I knew that, you know, I just didn't care about anything anymore. I really didn't care. And then on this Sunday, March 13, 1982, I had been drinking, and apparently I called my father in the blackout. I didn't remember, and he called back when I was out of the blackout. And I don't remember very much of the conversation, but I do remember one thing particularly well, and that to this day. I had an extremely, extremely profound spiritual experience. And for the first time in my life, I felt loved, which is something I really did not really feel before. I knew that there was a loving entity of immense love, immense kindness, an infinite entity. I know today is God, and the obsession, everything became very, very clear in my mind, and it just crystallized. And the answer was, it's the booze. And the obsession to drink, which had been with me all these years, was lifted in an instant, in a second. And it, with the exception of one time, about a month or so later, it has not come back in over 40 years. And that's why I say today that I am sober by the grace of God. And I told my father, I will go back to AA, and I meant it. Of course, he had no reasons to believe me, and I called back AA that Monday. I was in really, really bad shape, and the friends that I had known before came to see me and helped me, and I detoxed in AA, and when I went back to my first AA meeting, this was a small town south of London, about 30 miles south of London, called Maidstone. The person who would become my sponsor told me, welcome home. I had no concept before really of what a home was, but now I have discovered I have a home, and my home is with you in AA. And you are my family, and I love you all. I came to AA essentially on the first three steps. I knew there was absolutely no doubt, and there is no doubt whatsoever today in my mind that I am an alcoholic, and I can never, ever, ever drink safely. And the desire to drink, as I said, has been lifted, something that is miraculous and has never come back. And there's been, so my sobriety has not been linear. There has been, you know, difficult times, health issues. I continued to suffer from cluster headaches for my first 8 years in the fellowship. When I was about 3 months sober or so, I moved to the United States. My father brought me back here. The thing was that, I was I had stopped essentially maturing when I was 10 years old, and when I got to AA after 20 years of drinking, my survival skills and the way I reacted to the world and to others were those of a 10-year-old. So I had to learn to live. I had to learn to relate to other people. I had been before, as I've said, extremely isolated, and I was really quite ill and couldn't really work for a while. So there was a club for some of the faces that I can see here. There was a club in Bethesda called the Delray Club. And I would go to three meetings a day. I would go to the noon, the 6:30, and the 8:30 meeting, because that's the only place where I felt safe. And little by little, I started to feel, a little safer, a little bit better, and I started to change. But it took me a long time to get to the fourth step. The first step to me was what Bill calls the first gift of the first awakening, and I love that. I love that phrase in as Bill sees it. And that was really for me that spiritual experience was the first gift of the first awakening. The second awakening was when I was actually doing a fourth step willingly, but when I, after having done some really very how should I say, twisted things to my father, whom I blamed, still continue to blame for most of my troubles, and I was still seeing myself as a victim. With the help of a sponsor, after a particular incident, I was just absolutely appalled, just horribly appalled at the way I was, at my behavior, etc. And it was really the first time in my life that I looked not at what the harm that other people had done to me, which was great in my mind, but the harm that I had done to myself in that particular instance, my father. And I realized that I could not continue to live and think like a drunk and act like a drunk, and pretend to be sober. And that was the second gift of the second awakening, with that first sincere, fourth step, and moved on to the other steps slowly. I was involved in the fellowship. I was doing service. I was expanding my circle of friends and acquaintances, and I was still not really working the steps as I should have, and to derive the full benefit of the steps. And I remember at the beginning of the 12 and 12, it says the foreword that AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. The obsession to drink had been removed by the grace of God, but I was not getting the full benefit of the steps because I was not really working them as assiduously as I should have. And for me, the program of recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Essentially, this is where we get the spiritual awakening at the end of the 12th step, or at the 12th step. Several things happen when, there was actually a third gift and a third awakening. I was speaking at Maria Sponsor's anniversary in town, and somehow something, you know, just I blurted out something came out of me, and I had realized I was in my, I don't know, 13, 14 years sober at the time, and I had realized suddenly that all those years when I was drinking, there were three things I was looking for. I was looking for a loving God, I was looking for an identity, and I was looking for a purpose, because I had none of those when I was drinking. I didn't know who I was. I had no God except alcohol, and I had no purpose. AA had given, you know, gave me all those things. I found a loving God here. I find my identity, my primary identity is as an alcoholic. And my purpose, in as much as I can, is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. So this was the third gift and the third awakening. When I was about, I guess, 16, 17 years sober, I got divorced, and I lost a job that I thought would lead to a very, very, very interesting career. I kind of stopped going to AA meetings, not consciously and not, you know, not suddenly, but over a period of time, and it became, it's very insidious. My alcoholism is very insidious, and it, you know, it says that the ism of alcoholism is an insidious spiritual malady, and it certainly is in my case. Today is a daily reprieve, which is contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And my spiritual condition then was not maintained. And what happened over a period of time was that I started getting depressed again, very, very severe depression, which in this case, very, 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 very closely cost me my life. And another addiction also popped up, which was to spend money. And after a period of time and seeing in my case the fact that that psychiatry was simply not working, I decided to get off the number of antidepressants I was on and to return to AA and get a sponsor. And this is what I did. And things beginning to change, and I started to work the steps really very, very seriously. 8 and 9, I was able to change the way I looked at my father, which was also kind of a reverse fourth step. And instead of looking at the harm that he had done to me, I started to look at all the good things that he had brought into my life, his love of books, his love of study, his love of nature and things like this. And for me, that was the fourth gift. With my mother, whom I had really, really hurt when I was drinking, I was at my living ninth step to both my parents, but particularly to my mother. Was extremely meaningful. My mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's 11 years ago, and the illness progressed very, very quickly. And I was able to go to France for a period of time to help her. And actually went back to France when she was very getting very ill. And I remember I haven't seen her for 1 year. Oh, excuse me. And the illness really, really had progressed, and I thought I was going to spend 3 months there. I had taken an airline ticket, and I ended up spending close to 3 years to make sure that my mother was going to remain, to be safe for the rest of her life. And Maria and I would talk on a daily basis almost. And I am very, very grateful to the program of Alcoholics and to have been able to do that and to experience that. And my mother is still alive in France, I know that she's taken care of. She's well taken care of for the rest of her life. I can't tell you. I mean, I've been kind of all over the place, and I apologize for that. There were things I wanted to say and I have not said, and probably things that I didn't want to say and said. But the bottom line is, the life that we are given in Alcoholics Anonymous is something that I could never imagined in my wildest dreams, I love that the definition of humility in the fifth step, to have a clear recognition of who and what we really are, followed by a sincere desire to become what we could be. And for me, AA is a program of becoming. You know, every day that we don't drink, that we try to practice this program, or I try to practice this program to the best of my ability, is a blessing and a gift, an immense gift. I didn't want to live. I didn't care about my life. You know, I thought that I was just an aberration, that I was just unsuited for life. And through AA, I have a life today that is worth living. I have friends. I have the opportunity to do service. And thank you again, Stephen, for tonight. And I have the blessing of having all of you as my family. And the thing about Zoom has been so wonderful, because I've been able to go to Zoom meetings in France. We've had people, English-speaking people here from Australia, from New Zealand, from all over the place. Recently, Maria and I were able to go to a meeting in Kiev, in Ukraine, which made us feel very, very, very small, and just admire the courage and the fortitude of our AA brothers and sisters there. It is a God-given program for me, I have rambled long enough, and forgive my incoherence. I love you all. Thank you.